Support for The Exchange podcast comes from you, our listeners, and from McLean Middleton, New Hampshire's largest law firm. For over 100 years, they've been committed to their clients, community, and colleagues. Locations in Manchester, Portsmouth, and Concord, New Hampshire, and Woburn and Boston, Massachusetts. Learn more at McLean.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In a normal presidential campaign year, candidates fly out of Iowa in the wee hours of the morning after the Iowa caucuses, retooling their messages based on how they did in the Hawkeye State. But what do candidates say when they have no idea what the results were? As you probably heard already, the Iowa caucuses ended with no clear numbers on who received those coveted first, second, and third spots. Today in The Exchange, what happened in Iowa, how the candidates have reacted, and how it might affect their campaigns here in the Granite State. Let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Comment on Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. We have a panel of New Hampshire guests, but we're going to begin with two who've been in Iowa. We're joined by Chris Larimer, political science professor at the University of Northern Iowa. And Chris, welcome. Thank you for being with us. We know it was a late night.
You're welcome.
And joining us by phone from Manchester is Jess Bidgood. She's a national political reporter for the Boston Globe, and she just got back from Iowa, where she was reporting on the caucuses. And Jess, really nice of you to take time out as well. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, Chris, you're there in Iowa. What are people saying this morning?
Well, I think there's seems to be a lot of frustration going around and a lot of questions going around about what this means for the state and what it means for Iowa nationally going forward for the next presidential election cycle. I think people are just a little shocked, I guess, that we're in this position right now. I think for a lot of people there was concern going into caucus night about how the new process would work. And, you know, this was kind of the worst nightmare that we don't have any results just yet.
What was behind that nightmare, Chris? I know this has been reported a lot, but I'd love your take on it.
Well, you know, we're hearing a lot of different things. And initially it was talking about the new app that those who were running the caucus chairs who were running their caucuses were having issues with the app. And then we also heard that there was an issue with the call-in where you were calling in the results for the delegates for each one of those 1,600-plus precincts. But I think part of it, too, is just dealing with the new process where you had new rules. Last night they were supposed to be reporting three different sets of results in terms of the first preference group, the final alignment, and then the state delegate equivalent. That required some extra time to do the extra counting and to match up the preference. There was also the use of, I should say, preference cards as backup. So there was a paper trail. So a number of different things, I think, just sort of all seemed to come together. And you had rule changes as well, where the you know people who were, if they were in a viable group, they couldn't change groups at that point, different times in between alignments than there has been in the past. So I think it seemed to be just everything coming together last night.
What were behind some of those new processes, Chris? Why did the State Democratic Party even decide to put these new processes in place?
Well, this comes from after the 2016 election, where Bernie Sanders was pretty upset with the way things unfolded, I think, in Iowa, where Hillary Clinton was declared the winner on caucus night. But really the difference in the state delegate equivalence was, you know, about one percentage point, if that. And really when you get down to looking at the caucuses and looking at how those state delegate equivalents are calculated, they're based on initial preference group numbers that then go to final preference group numbers. And those numbers can be a little bit different than state delegate equivalent in terms of actual candidate strength. And so the Sanders campaign really wanted more transparency regarding the caucus process. The National Democratic Party agreed that the process needed to be more open and transparent. And so they asked for changes for any states that were holding caucuses in 2020. Iowa initially tried to do virtual caucuses. That was their initial proposal. And those, the Democratic Party said no, the National Democratic Party said no to for concerns about cybersecurity. And so we went to these other rule changes dealing with satellite caucuses and then the rule changes with now, you know, we were supposed to be reporting initial preference groups, final preference groups, and then the state delegate equivalent. And so that's where all this is coming from. It really kind of goes back at least to 2016 in terms of trying to be more open about the process.
So the cure ended up being worse than the disease, Chris.
Well, so far we're definitely having some issues getting anything reported out.
Well, Jess, I want to bring you into this too. So, when did you leave Iowa for New Hampshire, first of all?
That is a wonderful question. I cover the Elizabeth Warren campaign, and so I was at her results watching party in Des Moines until about midnight.
Wow!
And then the Warren plane that took off with Warren and staff and some of the press corps that covers her, I would say around 1 local time, and landed in Manchester at about 4:15 a.m. So nobody expected, I think, that we would be landing in New Hampshire without knowing the results in Iowa, but here we are.
Wow. So you landed at 4 a.m. in Manchester with the Warren campaign as part of the press, obviously, not part of the campaign itself.
Right.
What were people on the plane saying, either other members of the press, Jess, or members of the Warren campaign?
All night, beginning at the victory party or the results watching party, was a lot of general confusion, I think. I mean, for those of us who are not in Iowa all the time, the caucuses are confusing enough to begin with. I mean, it's a very different system than what you use here in New Hampshire and other primary states, where you have a fairly a simpler one person, one secret vote. So we had all been, I think, boning up on the caucus rules and how it works and what we were expecting to see. And then, of course, it really started to feel very chaotic. When we got off the plane, Warren spoke briefly with reporters, and she said, look, when we left Des Moines, I said it was too close to call, and it still is. But she said she feels good, and she says that her organizers are ready to deploy in the 31 states across the country where she has people. But I think a lot of people were looking forward to yesterday as the first chance to finally get a little bit of clarity on what has been a very fluid and super dynamic presidential campaign. I mean, we started with, you know, some 24 candidates beginning last year. And I think everybody was really hungry to get a little bit of insight into questions about electability and the strength of different candidates. And the picture this morning is muddled in a way that I think nobody wanted it to be, not the candidates, not the voters, and definitely not the party officials in Iowa.
Well, perhaps an even more golden opportunity for New Hampshire to weigh in. And I have 2 New Hampshire guests with me that we will talk to in just a moment. But I want to spend a few more minutes talking about Iowa, what happened, and where this might go from here. And I also want to invite our listeners to join us. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Chris Larimer, back to you. You know, Jess raised this, and you and I have talked before about the longstanding criticism of the caucus process. It's not inclusive, people say. It requires voters to travel to a specific spot, spend a couple hours there, you know, shutting out anybody who might have young children at home or someone who works as a waitress or someone who works in the ER. You know, you just can't leave that job to caucus. Is this failure last night in Iowa the beginning of the end for your caucuses there?
Well, I think for a lot of people, that's the real concern. As you said, those criticisms about the caucus, not only what Jess talked about in terms of, you're right, it is a very complex process, and it was complex before last night, and then we had all these new changes. But as you said, you know, who can attend? I mean, if you look at attendance at or turnout at the caucuses, it's typically in the past been about 25% to 30% of registered party members. If you look at it in terms of a proportion of people who actually show up in the November general election, so turnout rate is typically pretty low, or it's a small slice of the electorate. But this cycle, you also had candidates openly, you know, criticizing the caucuses in Julian Castro and others. You know, you had a candidate like Michael Bloomberg who just flat out skipped Iowa. And then you have this problem with the process. And the caucuses have had this before. If you go back to 2012, where the Republican caucuses, where Mitt Romney was declared the winner on caucus night, and then, you know, a little over 2 weeks later, they do the recount, and Rick Santorum is the winner. But that's already after the New Hampshire primary. So this is another criticism and an example people are going to use to say that Iowa should not go first. I think the only maybe saving grace for Iowa right now is how does the national party decide on, if it's not Iowa, then what state goes first? Or do we just move to New Hampshire? I mean, because that's going to be a difficult discussion as well.
And I know you've been asked this before, Chris, but, you know, again, after all this, and you're alluding to this, should Iowa just give up on this caucus thing? It was confusing before last night, and now it just seems like a total mess. Should you just give up and do regular elections with ballots and polling places and so forth?
Well, I don't know. I don't think we should give up on it. And the Democratic and Republican Party, we have to remember, they do their caucuses very differently. For the Republicans, it is basically a straw poll. Candidates or surrogates will come in, give a statement, and then the caucus attendees will just write the names of their preferred candidates on a piece of paper.
And go home?
I think, what's that?
And then go home. They don't have to hang around like they do for Democrats.
Right. They do some party business and elect delegates or, you know, people to the county central committees, but essentially they can go home after that. For the Democratic Party, there is a concern there, but I think the caucuses are unique. They do add something unique to the presidential nominating process, but obviously the procedures last night, you know, what was attempted did not work. And so, there are going to be some serious discussions going forward about what, if the Iowa caucuses want to remain first, what do we need to do, or what does the party, I should say, need to do to keep it first?
Got some calls and emails from listeners. And again, I want to remind you that you can join us with your comments and questions about what happened in Iowa last night and its impact on the New Hampshire primary, which kicks into high gear today. As a New Hampshire voter, how do you weigh all of this, what happened in Iowa? And do you think Iowa and New Hampshire should continue to play such an important role like they do right now? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Alex from Epsom writes, I want to say that I'm grateful to have a voice in choosing the party's nominees for president. Citizens of countries like the UK and Canada don't get to choose their party leaders, who then become the prime minister. We should take pride as Americans that the party system is as open as it is. Alex, thank you for weighing in on that. Mike in Guilford says, my belief is that the biggest risk to Iowa and New Hampshire's first in the nation status is not another state going forward, but irrelevance based on digital media, DNC debate rules leading to early culling of candidates, and the risk of not producing a clear winner and giving a candidate new life or momentum. Mike says, Iowa was most at risk due to the arcane caucus process. More pressure on New Hampshire now not to mess up. Thanks to Alex and Mike. And to you, Jess, on that point that Mike makes, you know, pressure on New Hampshire not to mess up. How do you see it?
I think that is absolutely correct. And I think it also puts more pressure on the candidates to do well in New Hampshire. Whenever we get the results from Iowa, all of this confusion is going to hang over those results. It's always going to be, I think, an asterisk when you say, here's what the results were. That's always going to kind of be lingering there. And so I think this increases the pressure on everybody to perform really well here so that they can claim momentum in a primary state that did not have these kinds of issues as they go on to Nevada and South Carolina, which are both, I think, also going to be turned up in importance in the primary process.
How do you think, Jess, candidates, I mean, obviously they're upset because they spent a lot of time and a lot of money in Iowa and so far don't have much to show for it, but how do you think they feel about the opportunity that this might present them in New Hampshire?
I think that's a good question. I mean, right now, they are handling this in different ways. The Sanders campaign went and put out some internal data that they had that they said was kind of they claimed that it was a representative cross-section of about 40% of precincts. They put that data out, and they said it showed that they won. I think you have to take it with a grain of salt when a candidate is putting out their own data saying they won. A giant, giant grain of salt. The Buttigieg campaign went and put out some of their own data that showed Buttigieg doing better than how he had performed in the Sanders data that went out. Amy Klobuchar's campaign manager went on Twitter and suggested that she could be running even or even ahead of Vice President Biden. And what's happened is a kind of like choose your own adventure ending to last night. And I caution anybody to be really careful looking at those results that came from the candidates, because with a posse information from the party of actual results from the party, we really don't know anything, but that will not stop candidates from trying to, you know, push out a certain narrative that benefits them in some way.
Wow, Jess, that's a great analogy. And my kids love those books when they were little, right? Like choose your own ending. Since you mentioned that, I do want to play reaction from the candidates last night, this audio courtesy of CNN, sort of how they spun what happened in Iowa and what it means for their campaigns. Let's hear.
We don't know all the results, but we know by the time it's all said and done, Iowa, you have shocked the nation. Because by all indications, we are going on to New Hampshire victorious.
We know there's delays, but we know one thing. We are punching above our weight.
Remember that first debate stage? There were 20 candidates. They had to break it up into two nights. And I'm going right from here to New Hampshire, where I will be one of the seven candidates on the debate stage on Friday night in New Hampshire.
We're going to walk out of here with our share of delegates. We don't know exactly what it is yet, but we feel good about where we are. And look, so it's on to New Hampshire.
This race started right here in Iowa, but from tomorrow, it will run from ocean to ocean. East to New Hampshire, and then west to Nevada, and then down to South Carolina.
Now it is on to New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina, California, and onward to victory. Thank you all very much.
Okay, again, that audio from CNN. That was Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, Andrew Yang, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders talking about their excitement, their prospects, and how they are going to manage this message of mixed results in Iowa. Coming up, we'll talk with two New Hampshire guests and get a lot more of your reaction. But for now, Chris Larimer, get some rest. We really appreciate you joining us. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's Chris Larimer, political science professor at the University of Northern Iowa. And Jess Bidgood, a really big thank you to you as well. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
That's Jess Bidgood, national political reporter for the Boston Globe. She's in Manchester, as we heard. She just got back from Iowa, where she was reporting on the caucuses. Coming up, your chance to weigh in on what we saw in Iowa, what it means for New Hampshire. You can join us with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477, or an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest in You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. For presidential candidates, it's on to New Hampshire from Iowa, and they are here already after a late night and a mess in the Hawkeye State. We're looking at how candidates will respond here in the Granite State and what this might mean for ongoing criticism of Iowa and New Hampshire's first places in our country's nominating process. Let's hear from you. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Tweet us, comment on Facebook, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Ray Buckley, chair of the New Hampshire Democratic Party. And Ray, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Great to be here.
Also with us, Neil Levesque, executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College, which hosts that New Hampshire debate that was referenced earlier Friday night, just before the primary. Neil, we know you're busy. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me on, Laura.
Well, and both of you, let's kick it off with a phone call. And John is waiting in Manchester. Hi, John. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning.
I have 2 points. The first one is, I think it's obvious Iowa has lost first that status. They can no longer be allowed to run that, the debacle last night. And unfortunately, I think they're going to take New Hampshire down with them, just in terms of how the media were talking about it last night in terms of states of representation. And secondly, I just have to say, what has happened with the DNC and with this app? Attached to the app are names. It's like a banana republic. There are still names from the Clinton administration behind the scenes. Dan Minima, David Plouffe, you know, these characters that we've seen Mook, you know, Robbie Mook is back in the background there. These are people that aren't even elected, and they're manipulating and disenfranchising every voter under 40 who no longer can trust that party to look out for their interests. We're going to lose to Trump because the DNC. Thank you.
John, thank you so much. And a lot of passion in his voice and lots of questions from your call, John. So thank you very much. And Ray, to you first, your broad reaction, and we'll get into some of the specifics John mentions, but your broad reaction from both you and Neil to what we saw last night in Iowa.
Well, obviously, we had thought that there would be an immediate results. This is the first time that Iowa's had to report all three numbers. It was part of the Unity Reform Commission report that the DNC voted on 2 years ago. We have plenty of time to do an autopsy on exactly what happened and how it was connected. I have full faith that once everything is released, that they'll be clear. I mean, there are paper ballots out there. That's how they vote. There's certainly enough to take a look at every single thing. So there's not going to be any question about rigging or anything like that.
Because there is a paper trail. Mm-hmm. Okay. Go ahead, Neil.
I couldn't help but think about the Democrat out there that really is passionate about this election and the fact that they've had disappointment and the fact that Trump won in 2016. Then we had the Mueller report, which was certainly sort of deflated the Democrats at that point. Now we have the impeachment, which is obviously going to turn out in a way that the Democrats don't like. The president likely to sort of have a sort of a victory lap tonight at the State of the Union. And now with Iowa not sort of bringing us to any kind of closure to what's been going on in this election. So you got to feel sort of a little bad. But here we are now moving on to New Hampshire. It's a totally different race here. It's a state-run race. We have a great Secretary of State who, you know, he's been very traditional about the way he's conducted these elections. And this is going to sort of change now to a series of sort of events, major events going into next week. And then, of course, a private ballot that you get to choose and a state-run election. Very, very different than a party-run election.
So you're reflecting on and understanding, Neil, where our caller's frustration comes from. It's been a down couple weeks for Democrats, and this just seems like one more sort of, you know, kick in the gut.
Absolutely. And, you know, I hear about political frustrations all day long. There's people who are very passionate now about politics, and they feel that they're not being heard or something's going wrong, and they're not, and there's no accountability. And so the good thing about elections is they help sort of help clear that up, and you get to put your energy into them. And so with last night, with what happened, it's sort of just a deflation of that. You don't really get to see who won from all of this.
Well, and Ray, for decades, the New Hampshire and Iowa Democratic parties have been joined at the hip, defending their status as the two firsts in the nation lineup. Is it time for New Hampshire to break up with Iowa to preserve our own place in line?
Well, I think that we're not even 24 hours from the closure of the caucuses. I think it's premature to jump to any conclusions that this was anything other. I think I want to just concur with Neil that what we do here in New Hampshire is a completely different system. You know, we have not just registered Democrats, but any independent and any unregistered person that wants to register on same-day registration can vote and participate. And we have hundreds of thousands of people that turn out here in New Hampshire. We have obviously a paper trail as well with paper ballots. So people should have complete confidence in what's happening in New Hampshire. Until we really hear exactly what's going on in Iowa, I don't think that anyone should be jumping ahead.
Well, and even before this failure in Iowa, many in your party around the country, Ray, have been criticizing the outsized role that New Hampshire and Iowa play in our country's nomination process, especially for Democrats, a party that prides itself on diversity. What's your case, Chairman Buckley, chairman of the party, that New Hampshire should still go first?
Well, it's not just Iowa, New Hampshire. It's Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina. And they were added, so it's four early states, not two any more. And this will have been our third cycle with our other two sister states. I'll be going out to once again help conduct caucuses in Nevada and heading down to South Carolina as well. So the reason that Nevada and South Carolina were added were because of the diversity in those states, so that we do have those. So we have where a huge percentage of the Nevada caucus goers are Hispanic. And in South Carolina, the majority of Democratic primary voters are African American. So their voices are all being heard very strongly. So we have, a state in the West, Midwest, East, and in the South, so that all four sections of the state of the country being heard. So I think that when you stand back and you look at the four early states, I think collectively they are pretty reflective.
Well, still, there's nothing like going first, and we have seen candidates drop out of the race after a failure in Iowa or New Hampshire, whereas perhaps if the first state that went was South Carolina or Illinois or Florida, it might be different. You see what I'm saying, Chairman Buckley?
I don't think so.
There is something magic about going first.
I don't think it would be that particularly different, because if you looked at the polling, those individuals that did drop out already were doing even more poorly in Nevada and South Carolina. So I think that you have to just stand back, take a look at the whole. This is a system that has worked well. Let's find out what happened in Iowa. And, for those who are so passionate about ranked choice voting, this is what ranked choice voting is like. In Maine, it took them over a couple weeks to find out who the member of Congress was, or who the Democratic nominee for governor was going to be. I mean, that's the process of having to do all this. But when they added on that you had to list all three of the results, we knew that there would be an issue. We just didn't believe that it was going to be this big of an issue.
And just a reminder that the Iowa Democratic Party has said that, quote, while our plan is to release results as soon as possible today, our ultimate goal is to ensure the integrity and accuracy of the process to be upheld. That's from a statement from the Iowa Democratic Party. And that's to, Jonathan's concern that some of the results might be funny or not accurate and so on and so forth. Martha in Lebanon sent us an email. She says, reports indicate that the Iowa problem is not in the caucus system, nor in the counting system, but in the reporting of the results. Is this correct? Neil, again, you're a New Hampshire guy, but can you shed any light on that, please?
Well, early reports are that the new app that they were using, new technology, they knew possibly 2 weeks ago that it wasn't working correctly. There was a way to call in your results if the app didn't work. And this is a whole new system. I think what it does is it's actually not a damning necessarily of Iowa. It is a damning of, we always have to have a new idea and a new way to do it, just like my daughter's downloading brand new music all the time with a new app every week. The point is that sometimes doing it the way we've always done it works. And maybe we should stick with the way things work. And that's what we do in New Hampshire. And so I'm looking forward to the next week. And I think that you know, the next week is really going to show that there's a lot of diversity in New Hampshire, a lot of diverse ethnic backgrounds, social backgrounds, and I'm looking forward to the fact that there's different people in the state are all going to come together and participate in a statewide election.
Well, Martha, thank you for the email. And you can send us an email as well, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Ray, both you and Neil have talked about, you know, the integrity of our elections, the paper ballot. It's a regular old election. You don't have to stand around and caucus for anybody. You just go to the polls, cast your ballot, and go home. But last night's outcome in Iowa does seem to increase concerns about how elections are run. Again, obviously here in New Hampshire, we're not a caucus. There is some concern, though, that we talked about yesterday on The Exchange, that our Secretary of State's office has downplayed the threat to election security this year, has not engaged in some of the practices that experts say would help, such as audits. What do you think, Ray? Do you share the concerns that some people are voicing this year about elections security and that New Hampshire could take some more steps toward that end?
I guess one could consider that we could take infinite numbers of steps. But the reality is that we've never had an issue with the New Hampshire primary. This is our 100th year of having the primary. What if there's ever any issue, we can do a recount. And which when one candidate a few years ago didn't believe they received so many so few votes, they asked for recount. And then when they saw that it was identical to the original reported, they stopped after a couple days. Listen, the fact that our system, I think it is impossible to hack because it includes so many human beings and the fact that there's the paper trail. These are the people that are working in the polls are proud New Hampshire citizens that have worked hard over the years to make sure that there's some sanctity to casting ballots. We hold elections a lot in New Hampshire.
Yes, we do.
there is never really a question about how they're being conducted. We don't have the sort of scandals that occur in some other states simply because it's, as Neil said, it's simple. It's clear. You go in, you know, you check in, you get a ballot, you mark the ballot, you put it in the thing that counts it, and then the local folks take it all together. But at the end of the day, we've got a paper trail. I don't think there's any question that the New Hampshire primary will be 100% perfect.
Neil, to you too. So New Hampshire does do recounts, and we've seen those before. We don't do audits, which many states do, and experts say that would be a good way to improve security. There are also some what people call cyber hygiene that New Hampshire doesn't quite do the same way as other states do. I just wonder what your thoughts are or concerns that you might have about election security this time around, given heightened awareness of this issue.
Out of all the things that I deal with on the political level, I think dealing with the Secretary of State's operation is probably the best. And the integrity up there in that office is solid and he knows how to do it and he does it right. I think that there's always going to be these sort of conspiracies and things that come out of these sort of close calls or no calls, as we saw yesterday. And, you know, if you weren't going to do well in Iowa last night, your whole thing now is to sort of say, well, now the whole thing is corrupt and we don't know what the problem was. So there's an advantage to a candidate who possibly wasn't going to do well last night.
Gives him a second chance, Neil?
Yeah. And then there's the whole thing with the other side. So the president's campaign manager really sort of pushed out this idea that there's a whole bunch of activists potentially on the Sanders side that are not going to get heard. And this is the whole thing. And it ties into the poll that the Des Moines Register didn't release. So there's all kinds of things that different campaigns are going to try to take advantage of in the week to come in order to sort of undercut what happened yesterday.
Oh, I see. So by putting out conspiracy theories, you make people feel sort of bitter about the process and depressed turnout? Is that the goal?
Well, remember that the last primary period, a lot of people who supported Sanders were not happy about what happened. And if that depressed turnout in the general election, that's not good for the Democrats. And so the more that the Trump campaign can say, see, here's another example, they're not letting Bernie win. And that kind of undercutting is you're going to hear a lot of that in the next week.
Well, since you mentioned the Des Moines Register poll, just for people who don't know what that was about, from the New York Times, this is their summary. A highly anticipated poll of Iowa Democrats set to be released 2 days before the presidential caucuses was shelved Saturday night because of concerns about irregularities in the methodology. According to the Times, the apparent problem was raised by aides to Pete Buttigieg, who said that an Iowa supporter received a phone call from an operator working for the polling operation, but that the name of the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, was not listed on the menu of options. So just so if folks aren't up on what you were talking about,
and
that's an explanation.
A lot of people don't know that universities conduct these polls. There's a whole, when you do research on a human subject, there is a whole series of protocols. Our students at St. Anselm actually have to go through a testing situation in order to just call people and say, who are you going to vote for? There's a lot of protocols there, so there's a lot of science behind it. And it may or may not be a conspiracy, but I doubt it. I think it's just someone following the rules.
All right. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. We're looking back a little bit at what happened last night in Iowa, the results, or as Neil Levesque said, the non-results from the caucuses, and the impact on the New Hampshire primary just a week from today. As a New Hampshire voter, how do you view all this, and how might it affect the way that you interact with candidates as they are all over the state this week? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Christopher in Manchester writes, I've heard a few pundits this morning say this whole debacle benefits Mike Bloomberg. If it propels Bernie forward as the ultimate nominee, Christopher says, Bloomberg can step in as the mainstream alternative, and he can also tout his background as a numbers cruncher, statistics expert, and as the antidote to the chaos of the caucus. Christopher, thank you for writing in. I'm going to throw this to you, Neil, because Ray is chair of the party. I know it's a little uncomfortable for you to comment on particular candidates. So go ahead, Neil.
I think that the jury is out on what Mike Bloomberg is doing. If anyone can do what he's doing, it's somebody who has national name recognition and $54 billion. So you don't need what the first four states give you in earned media and the excitement and the momentum if you have all kinds of money. Even though I'm a staunch advocate, obviously, for the New Hampshire primary, I'm not going to say that what he's doing wouldn't win. We have to wait to see.
We don't know.
And there is certain, he spent $250 million so far. And if there's a problem with the first state in Iowa, certainly the data there would say that it would benefit someone who's skipping those early states.
Yeah, Bloomberg would say, see, I told you so. His people must be celebrating. It seems like a pretty good strategy on their end.
Yes, I think there's a couple campaigns that are actually sort of feeling pretty good about the fact that they didn't have to say, yeah, I came in fourth or fifth last night.
Interesting. And here's another email from Andrew in Hillsborough who says states should be offered, quote, poll position based on presidential voting proportions. Basically, states or territories that get the best voter participation numbers are rewarded with dibs on primary position. Andrew says it would also encourage voter participation left, right, and center. And Ray, I'll throw that to you. If that were the way it were done, New Hampshire would be first, right? We have good participation.
Yeah. We not only have great participation in the presidential primary. We have the percentage, the highest turnout in any state that conducts the primaries or caucuses. But in general election, we're typically among the top, if not the top, in presidential and non-presidential, and even in primary votes. We have astounding turnout.
All right. Well, thanks for those emails and those phone calls. Again, you can join us when we come back from a short break. What do you think what happened in Iowa means for candidates here in the Granite State? And what are you hoping to hear from these candidates as they hit the state this week? They'll be all around all week. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
Here in New Hampshire, we know resources are precious. Unspoiled wilderness, clean air, pure water. To be a Granite Stater is to know we must protect these for future generations. However, it's easy to forget that community resources like public radio need your protection too. Reporters with integrity, stories that bridge our divisions about issues that matter. These are all things you've come to expect from NHPR. help protect this precious resource for future generations by adding just one sentence to your estate plans. Learn more at nhpr.plannedgiving.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, it's the Astronomy Hour with our Sky crew. Join us Wednesday morning, live at 9, for that conversation. This hour, how the lack of results in Iowa affects the last week of campaigning here in New Hampshire. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. What do you think the results or lack of results from Iowa last night means for candidates here in the Granite State? As a New Hampshire voter, how do you anticipate how the last week of campaigning will roll out here in the Granite State? We'd love your thoughts, questions, comments. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, nhpr.org. Neil Levesque is here, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College, which hosts that big New Hampshire presidential debate Friday night. Also with us, Ray Buckley, chairman of the New Hampshire Democratic Party. And Ray, to you first. So here we are. Iowa is done, sort of. We'll wait to see what happens. But in the meantime, this is Christmas for you, right? Like, what is this week like for the chair of the Democratic Party here in the Granite State?
It was phenomenal this morning. I got off the highway, stopped off at the dry cleaners, went by about a dozen folks holding Tulsi Gabbard signs on the side of the street, dropped off, head this way, and lo and behold, in front of the State House is this huge rally along with Elizabeth Warren. So you saw all these cameras and the buses and all the folks, and I tooted and waved to a lot of the folks that I recognized holding signs out there. Whatever happened in Iowa happened in Iowa, but nobody from New Hampshire should not take advantage of this week to go to those town hall meetings. I think Friday night's debate is going to be off the charts with ratings. I think this will be the first debate in a month, and I think that a lot of people are going to be tuning in to look at this. This could be a very, very pivotal debate.
Well, this is my seventh primary, and I know the anticipation and excitement. The candidates get off those planes from Iowa, and, you know, things really get up and running. Do you feel sort of like some of these campaigns feel a little deflated, Ray? Like, oh, I've got, you know, nothing to talk about now.
Well, I think a lot of them now, it's our time. I think Neil alluded to the fact that, oftentimes some major candidate withdraws the day after or the night of Iowa.
That's right.
Nobody withdrew.
Joe Biden many years ago withdrew after Iowa.
The long list of individuals. Last time it was Martin O'Malley. And so nobody withdrew.
So it's a second chance.
They're all here. Exactly. I mean, it just like here we are. Everyone's out there. We've had, Deval Patrick and Michael Bennett and Tulsi here the whole week anyways. Now we've got them all. And they'll be crisscrossing the state nonstop. And I think it's just a phenomenal week. And we should celebrate the New Hampshire primary.
So they're not deflated. They're more excited than ever, maybe, because they don't have to say, here's why I came in fifth.
Well, and nobody has that pressure until we see the results.
Sure.
But sometimes there's a pressure like, oh, if you won in Iowa, then you've got to win in New Hampshire or any of that sort of stuff that right now it's like it's a clean slate. Everyone goes off. And so I think it's quite exciting. The CNN town hall meetings that are going to be taking place at St. Anselm as well tomorrow evening and Thursday evening, I think will be well watched. And I just think that we've got a great opportunity to really see all the candidates without any sort of filter from
Iowa. Interesting. Okay, so the debacle in Iowa, Neil, actually is an opportunity not only for New Hampshire but for the candidates here.
Absolutely. So the energy started this morning at about 4 in the morning. You saw Klobuchar come off the Manchester airport with a full crowd of people there welcoming her. Same with Andrew Yang. And I think you're going to see, as Ray mentioned, a whole series of different things. So those CNN town halls, that's 8 candidates, 8 hours, Wednesday, Thursday. The debate coming up on Friday, that's 1,700 people in a hall with about 1,000 members of the media, all at St. Anselm College.
Wow.
Multiple
I'm impressed that you're here today, by the way, Neil. No, thank you.
That's why I'm in jeans. Multiple events going on through Saturday. The big Shaheen McIntyre dinner is Saturday with Chairman Buckley at the Verizon or SNHU Arena. And, you know, it's not just for Democrats who are really motivated, but the Republicans as well. So you have the president and the vice president coming into Manchester on Monday. And the rally Monday night will probably break all records for the Southern New Hampshire University Arena. And so nonstop action, lots of opportunities. But I think that the voters here are already really motivated, and this is just going to put it into the stratosphere.
Wow. Good luck finding a parking place in Manchester this week. Let's go back to our listeners, both of you. And Peyton's calling from Durham. Hi, Peyton. Thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I just want to say just a few things. One, it's really exciting. Everyone's heading to New Hampshire here. The next week's going to be crazy and exciting and great. The second is, you know, last night with that caucus, I have to agree that really makes the case that you've just got to have a paper trail. And I think you need to keep it just really as low-tech as possible. You know, you've got a lot of sophisticated companies and financial service firms, and everyone's getting hacked all the time. And to think that, you know, an adversary couldn't really gunk up an election using technology. You know, just the volume one of the Mueller report just says how quickly the Russians got in and attacked the Clinton campaign and then jumped all the way to the national level. So, boy, I would keep it really simple. I would have as little technology in the election process as possible, and I would always have fallback to paper and then to sort of a multiple people looking at everything. So that's my comment, and excited for this week.
Okay, Peyton, thank you very much for calling. We talked about this yesterday in the exchange, and it sounds like, from what I learned yesterday, Ray, New Hampshire's always had paper ballots, and it sounds like, I think somebody said almost all the states now are going back to paper ballots mm-hmm. so that they can have that paper
trail. There were
a
few years. Manchester had machines that you did the little click in.
I see.
I felt very uncomfortable because in my way of looking at it, I was never sure which little lever lined up with the candidate. So I always had anxiety voting. But when we reverted back, when I was in the legislature on the election law committee, we worked with Bill Gardner and went back to paper ballots for all voters in New Hampshire in every situation. So I think that was a very wise thing that was done about 20, 30 years ago. I'm glad, and I agree with Peyton on all of his points.
Peyton, thank you for the call. And again, you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Our email exchange at nhpr.org. And gentlemen, I want to ask both of you about the debate, since you mentioned the debate that you're hosting, Neil, at St. Anselm College later this week. What's your take, Neil, on the criticism that has been leveled at the Democratic Party this year? The idea that these debates set out criteria that you had to meet before you get on the stage for money, polls, and so on and so forth, and that those criteria were, in the end, perhaps too tough, that you saw a lot of candidates getting bumped off the stage pretty early, including candidates of color for a party that prides itself on diversity. And I just wonder what your thoughts are about that.
Well, there were 26 real leading candidates a year ago, and at some point you sort of need to be able to winnow that down. And candidates can attract attention. Look at Pete Buttigieg, you know, someone who's 38 years old, who all of a sudden, basically from nowhere, just catapulted. And a lot of that is because of New Hampshire. There are other things besides debates, these CNN town halls that I mentioned. So there's other ways that candidates are getting out into the sort of universe and touching voters. And it's not just debates. But I think that the Democrats are, you know, they were in a tough position. They have to figure out a way so that you can actually have a real honest debate other than 26 candidates on the stage all saying, yes, I agree with that.
So how did Republicans manage this 4 years ago they had a lot of candidates?
We had 13, I believe, with Trump on the stage at our debate 4 years ago. And it's tough because it's really whoever just sort of makes the flashy headline rather than you're getting into the weeds about any kind of real policy and what the difference is with these candidates. So it's really tough. We did a congressional debate at St. Anselm where I think we had 14 on the stage, and it just, you know, in an hour, you only have enough time to say, yeah, I agree. And there's no sort of ability to go out and sort of see what the candidates are really like.
So, and I hear you as someone who's moderated debates, it is tough to manage, you know, 12, 13, 14 candidates in a meaningful way. On the other hand, do you think, Neil, that there's something to the criticism that the DNC's rules were too tough, that it bumped people off too early?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate, but I think we've got a pretty good field right now. The Democrats have a pretty good field. And, you know, we're going to see what happens this week on Friday. I don't really subscribe to that. And I think I think for the viewers, you want to be able to sort of pick those top people and sort of decide what you're going to do. And these debates allow that to happen.
I got to get you in on this too, Ray. Lots of criticism about this debate process.
There have been, but my response is okay, what's your plan? What's your alternative? How would you have conducted this? Because Neil was absolutely right. When you've got in excess of 10 people on a debate, it's not a debate. Everyone is given a grand total of maybe a minute and a half because unfortunately, the way national debates are done are different than we do here in New Hampshire, where we make sure that everyone has about equal time. They really gravitate towards the leaders and don't pay as much attention to those who are not polling as well. So I think I would rather look at that sort of part of how these are conducted than how they use the system to try to winnow it down. Just hopefully we'll never have this problem again. We've had upwards 40 people at one point telling me they're going to run for president or announce for president. It's just been a mind-blowing experience the last couple of years.
Let's go to our listeners again. And Margie's calling from Manchester. Hi, Margie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I just had a comment about some of the news that I've been hearing about voter turnout in Iowa, that it was slightly lower than expected from the Democrats for this election. And one of the things, and certainly I don't have any scientific data, but it seems to me that it's not due to a lack of enthusiasm from Democrats, but more of they've already made up their mind that anybody is better than Donald Trump. And we saw that a lot last night with the entrance pollings on the different news stations, that was the number one concern for voters. And I think, you know, there's probably a good chance that that's an indicator of why it wasn't as high as expected.
Interesting.
Because their decision is made.
Very interesting. What do you think, Ray?
Well, I think Margie is right that there is some great satisfaction among a healthy percentage of the voters that any of these candidates would make terrific presidents as compared to the incumbent. And I just do also want to mention that the turnout last night was on the same level as 2016. So it's not like it was down from 2016. It's just that with all these different reforms that they thought it was going to be higher because they had these satellite caucuses going on there. There were so many different opportunities to be able to participate than had existed before. So the fact that it was the same was a little surprising. But once again, there was just so many changes the way Iowa was conducted that was imposed on them. It wasn't the Iowa Democratic Party that proposed any of these. These came from the DNC and the Reform Commission. They've tried to implement it. And I'm anxiously awaiting to hear from the Iowa Dems on how it all worked out.
And Neil, I want to ask you about New Hampshire's famous late deciding voters, and this goes for Republicans and Democrats. People in the Granite State are known for not deciding until the very last minute, sometimes, you know, the day of the primary. What's your sense of how many Democratic voters now? It's pretty strong indications that most Republicans support President Trump, although you can correct me if I'm wrong. But among New Hampshire Democrats, what's your sense of how many are still undecided?
I think that generally the vast majority could switch in this last week. And I think—
Really? Wow.
The reporter that was on earlier that said that, you know, you choose your own ending is really, that was the quote of the day because, you know, no one can declare victory, so you can't get this big boost. So now here we are. Everybody's on sort of a level playing field. We'll be releasing poll numbers tomorrow, but I don't think we're going to come out with anything that sort of is a big shocker that any one candidate is in the major league. So it's a free for all right now, and the week ahead is going to change. If the vote was held today, it would be different than next Tuesday. And I think I always remember that 1988 election. You know, Bush did not do well in Iowa. He comes to New Hampshire, he's down and out, and he just really works hard. And he turns it all around.
Anything can happen in the next week. Yep. Another email came in from Lynn in Sanborn. She says, you lost Cory Booker. And he wisely made the point that black supporters are often low-wage earners and could not do the money donations that the middle class and upper can do. Lynn says that's a valid and worrisome point when the rules for staying in include money raised. Lynn, thank you so much. And Ray, Cory Booker did make that point when he was on with me a couple weeks ago. He dropped out not long after, saying that the money thresholds are unfair.
Well, I look forward to having a conversation with him later on, because the alternative is what would his alternative be, other than having 15, 20 or so candidates on a stage. So he can say that it's unfair, but I think that the point was is that it was low dollar donations. These were about people giving a dollar. It's not like the percentage was based on how much they gave. It's how many people.
So it was the number of
the number
donors, even if they gave a dollar.
Exactly.
And I remember John Delaney had some scheme where he was giving money to people's favorite charities if they would donate a dollar to his campaign, so he could say
he had
a lot of those. This was way early on. But still, you know, Tom Steyer, for example, no political experience, kind of just jumped on the scene, although he's been involved in funding causes for a while, because he has been able to buy massive amounts of ads on YouTube and other platforms. He's still on the debate stage. So, you know, that was another point that Cory Booker made with us that, you know, OK, I hear you when you say that it's small dollar donations that count. So anybody can achieve that if they work hard enough. But if you've got the money to put the ads out there, it's easier to get it done.
Well, you've got Andrew Yang, who's also on the stage, who is even a more less probable candidate that you would have assumed, having also never not being a billionaire and not ever having held elective office. But here he is. He's got a strong, enthusiastic support out there, and they're working really hard. They worked hard in Iowa. They're working hard here in New Hampshire and elsewhere. So I think it's a pretty good process.
All right. Well, Lynn, thank you very much for that email. And Neil Levesque, I'm going to give you one more chance to just tell us about that debate that's coming up at the Institute of Politics on Friday night. The details, who's going to be there, and all the preparations that are going
on.
So
we have a huge sort of protester area for people who are supporting or against candidates out front. That's always exciting to see. 1,700 people in the audience, CNN right next door to the ABC debate, and 1,000 members of the press. So very, very exciting. Lots of opportunities for our students. And everybody wants a ticket. I have to say, we're out. So.
I assumed as much. That's why I didn't even ask. All right. Well, good luck with that. Thank you very much, Neil, for coming in. It was nice to see you.
Thank you.
That's Neil Levesque. Again, he's executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College. And Ray Buckley, good to see you, too. Thank you for
good
your time.
You.
That's Ray Buckley, chair of the New Hampshire Democratic Party. And you've been listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.